This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is William Vogely, author most recently of Never Enough, America's Limitless Welfare State. He's also a visiting scholar at the Henry Salvatore Center at Claremont McKenna College. And Mr. Vogely, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about the welfare state, because as you point out in the book, Ronald Reagan came into office almost 30 years ago, basically saying that government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. We saw after 2 years of Democratic control in the early 90s, the Republican Revolution, Bill Clinton signed into law sweeping welfare reform, and it seemed like America was headed down a path of less government intervention in the people's lives, and 15 years later, we're right back there. What happened?
What happened was, in my expert analysis, having looked at all the data, my conclusion is that the political problem is that people like getting stuff, and the politicians who promised them that they are going to, if elected, will give them more stuff, have a decided built-in electoral advantage over the ones who say, elect us and we will interrupt the flow of goods and services and transfers from Washington.
Does this all emanate from the Great Depression and Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal policies to try and dig us out of it, or does it even go back further than that?
I think in many ways, at least as a set of ideas, it goes back further than that. I'm with those who... those scholars and folks today who are making the case that at the level of ideas, the New Deal was heavily indebted to the Progressive Revolution of the late 19th and early 20th century, to people like Woodrow Wilson, Theodore Roosevelt, Herbert Croly. It was these folks who really sort of laid the groundwork for the idea that the American founding in the 18th century, the one based on nature, needed to be replaced with what amounted to a second founding, one based on the idea of history. I mean, that's the very term they chose to call themselves, progressives, makes the case that the key thing that they're concerned with is the future, is moving to a different and presumably better future, and government is has the job of sort of helping us along that path.
We're talking with William Vogely. The book is Never Enough. And Mr. Vogely, you make a very interesting statement in the book. You say that liberal victories, and that's political victories, promote liberalism, expands government. Conservative victories just postpone liberal agendas. Explain why.
For conservatives, the sad reality when you look at the numbers, the history, is that even under Ronald Reagan, the welfare state, federal outlays on human resources, adjusted for population growth and inflation, grew more slowly than they did during any other eight-year period in our history, dramatically more slowly. They grew less during the 8 years Reagan was president than during many individual years in the Great Society era. But still, they grew, which means that the sort of golden days of conservatism involved slowing things down and getting us to where liberals were heading, but just at a slower rate. If we want a different result, we have to take a different approach, I think.
Elsewhere in the book, Mr. Vogely, you talk about how a lot of the ideas that add on to the welfare state come from this notion of rights being created, where our founders perhaps didn't even consider that some of these areas ought to be considered rights. What are some of those key areas that have added drastically to our tax burden and obviously our growing debt?
Well, I think they were encapsulated most effectively and most tellingly by Franklin Roosevelt's famous State of the Union address in 1944, where he proclaimed that we Americans have, in effect, he said, already accepted what he called the Second Bill of Rights. And that Second Bill of Rights, he never proposed formally amending it to the Constitution, but he wanted it to be what one of his admirers, Cass Sunstein, now an important figure in the Obama administration, called a constitutive commitment. So these were rights to a good education, good housing, pretty much the whole list of welfare benefits and provisions that would guarantee economic security. And he didn't, although he spelled out a fairly long list in some detail, he made the important stipulation that this list is not exhaustive. That is, no matter how many rights we enumerate, we're going to not leave the door ajar. There's still the possibility further down the road of coming up with yet additional rights if we decide that there's something else that people ought to have and the government ought to provide them.
Well, Mr. Voegele, some have said that given the pace we're on right now and given how far down this road we've already gone, it's going to take something akin to what's happening in Greece and potentially some other European countries before the U.S. gets the message. Is that inevitable, or is there a way to reverse the tide?
I hope there's a way to reverse the tide. I hope that the financial difficulties that are besetting Greece, other European welfare states, are sort of the canaries in the coal mine, and Americans can look at what's happening there and say, we're pretty sure we want to avoid that. We want to keep from getting in such desperate straits that only drastic, wrenching changes can make our government enterprise solvent again. If that's the case, then we'll be fortunate if we're astute enough to sort of learn that lesson by example rather than through experience. But that's a big question.
Well, sir, you also have an entire chapter in this book entitled Conservatism's Continuing Inability to Make a Difference, and we talked about that before. Throughout the rest of this midterm election campaign season, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot of promises from the Republicans about how things will be drastically different, reducing the size of government will be huge planks in their platform this year. But realistically, what can they do even if they get control of Congress and eventually the White House?
Yeah. Well, I think realistically they can say to the people, the kind of cutbacks that everyone knows we need aren't fun, but what is the alternative? I think that it's very interesting that the roadmap for America's future, proposed by Congressman Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, has gotten a lot of attention, but only sort of at the moment tepid and tenuous support from within Republicans on Capitol Hill and in the various campaign committees. They don't want to, feeling that they're sort of on a roll, that they have a good election on the horizon, they don't want to spoil things by committing themselves explicitly to Ryan's program to replace the Medicare, the entire Medicare system over time with a voucher system, to increase the retirement age for Social Security, other drastic changes. But I think that if the Republicans come back to power, if they have two good elections, as you say, in 2010 and 2012, and wind up in January of 2013 with majorities in both houses of Congress and a Republican in the White House, then if they want to govern and make a difference, then they're going to have to deal from a basis along the lines of what Ryan has proposed.
Mr. Voegele, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
William Voegele is a visiting scholar at the Henry Salvatore Center at Claremont McKenna College. His new book is Never Enough, America's Limitless Welfare State. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.